The best of the season 38 returnees on Rob as a Podcast is sponsored by Tommy John. Shop limited edition Valentine's Day gift sets and get 20% off your first order of Tommy John underwear at TommyJohn.com/Rob. That's TommyJohn.com/Rob for 20% off the most comfortable men's and women's underwear you'll ever wear. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino, and we are back here today with some special coverage all about these four returnees from Survivor 38. That's right, we have a special presentation today where we are going to be listening to some of the greatest clips from our Survivor 38 returning players here on Rob Has a Podcast. And I have been bullish about these returning players. All of them have appeared with me on Rob Has a Podcast. We have talked game. We have had a lot of fun. And we have had well over 20 combined appearances from the Survivor 38 returning players. And that's what we're going to listen to here today in this very special episode of the podcast. The Survivor 38 preseason is well underway. We have had all of First One Out dropped on us by Josh Wiggler, where he went to Fiji, interviewed every single player in the season, not just the returning players. That's all up on robhasawebsite.com. For the first time, we also posted those videos on YouTube, where you can see the images of the players that are speaking to Josh all throughout First One Out. You can access that anytime at robhasawebsite.com/foo. F-O-O YouTube. robhasawebsite.com/foo-youtube. And then you can also get all of our returning player profiles, the Story So Far series as well, in addition to First One Out, everything Survivor 38 related on our Survivor 38 homepage, robhasawebsite.com/S38 to access that. Or, of course, you can just subscribe to Rob as a Podcast, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes for everything we're doing, or robhasawebsite.com/Survivor Podcast for Just Survivor, and you don't have to worry about any of that pesky celebrity Big Brother content showing up in your feeds either. And before we get into talking about some of the highlights from Aubrey Bracco on Rob as a Podcast, I just want to thank Sam Moore and Alex Rubino, who helped me out doing a lot of research on this project, as well as the patrons of Rob as a Podcast, who in our patron Facebook group answered the call and told us about some of their favorite moments about these Survivor 38 returnees. So let's go ahead and talk about the story of Aubrey Bracco here on Rob as a Podcast. Aubrey Bracco, lots of fun to talk to. We first got to see her back in Survivor Koh Rong. And here she is on the morning after the Survivor Koh Rong finale. That the way that CBS sets up these calls sometimes is you end up with sort of the second and third place finishers on the call. So she is on the line with Ty. They are both going to go leave and go play Survivor Game Changers within about a week to 10 days of doing this call with me. But here is my conversation with Aubrey Bracco from May 19th, 2016. Let me start with Aubrey. And I know there's a lot of disappointed people out there. I'm sure you've heard from many of them. Do you feel like, was there anything that you feel like you could have done differently that would have swayed the minds of this jury?
I do not believe, Rob, in that moment that there was anything that I could have done to sway the jury. It was not my night. It was like walking into a room and everybody was talking about you and it wasn't good. I just had that vibe when I left that it wasn't going to work for me. Some people will probably say that I could make the argument about my two biggest allies getting bumped out of the game as like, this was my journey. It was super hard, but I knew that that jury was not loving the fact that I worked with Joe. They saw it as my extra vote. They didn't see it as something that I actively did to keep Joe with me. And I know some of them believe that I was saved because Neil went out. So I knew that argument was going to work. So I thought the best thing I could do is state what I did. And that's what I did. And it was the best I could do in that moment. And I also saw some secret scenes this morning. And it sounds like Jason and Scott were pretty made up that they were going to vote between Michelle and Ty and that I wasn't in the running. So that was interesting to see.
Yeah, not great to hear for any of us, probably. So shortly after doing the exit interview with me, Aubrey is going to go play in Survivor Koh Rong, and then she's going to come back a year later and amazingly is going to be on another exit interview with Tai Trang, this time as the fourth and fifth place finishers of Survivor Game Changers. And we had a chance to ask her about the new jury system, which was implemented in Survivor Game Changers. Here's Aubrey from May 25th, 2017.
I've
got a question for you from Laura Kathleen, who wants to get your take on the new jury format, as it seems like Koh Rong was the catalyst for that, making that change to the final tribal council. What do you think of that? And is that one of the ways that you were a game changer?
Yeah, maybe. I know the 32s are probably all, you know, tweeting around this morning. I personally love the new round table. I think that it allows the player to showcase every facet of their game and not just the things that are the super apparent big moves. But I think because it's discussed in the open forum, you're able to unearth kind of the nuances and the minutia behind the plays and maybe illuminate those more subtle plays. And it also kind of gives the jury the opportunity to inspect everything that the players are doing in a more 360 degree way. So I personally really like it. I also like that the burden of proving what you did is still on the players. It doesn't change with the essence of what the jury is supposed to be. And I also think that, you know, we should give juries credit. Like, these are people who came to play Survivor and love the game of Survivor and are taking it seriously and as a responsibility. We should believe that they have the ability to take this information in real time and change their preconceived notions if there was something they were wrong about. I think something very striking to me watching last night was you can see on my face, other jurors' faces like Haley, that they're in the moment taking this information in and making an educated decision. And I do think it's possible that if we had this in Koh Rong, there could have been a difference. And I don't think it was maybe necessarily one place that could have been different. I think it could have been two. And I think that Tai's game may have been seen more fully too, because he played a hell of a game in Koh Rong. And I think that he played a great game. He just wasn't able in that moment to articulate what he did because he didn't have the opportunity to kind of flesh things out.
A couple days later, after that exit interview, Aubrey was here with me in the studio, and we did our first ever deep dive with a player covering two different seasons of the show. Back on May 29th, 2017, she brought in a laptop. She had taken notes throughout her two seasons of things that she wanted to talk about. And so it's a really great interview. I'll have all of the links to these interviews in the show notes for this podcast up on robswebsite.com. But I want to pull this clip of Aubrey talking about how she really got started on the wrong foot in Game Changers based on the starting tribe, the Mana tribe. No, we're not up to Joe Anglim yet with Mana, the Mana tribe. And we want to hear about Aubrey's start to the game back on May 29th, 2017. Let's talk about this group that you ultimately start with. Yes. What were you thinking when you came in with them and saw these people? Because that I had mentioned this when we got to speak the other day, where I was so excited that you were the one person who said, I would love to work with Tony.
Oh, I wanted to work with Tony so badly. Mm-hmm. Like, my strategy coming in was, I knew right when Koh Rong ended and I got the idea of the magnitude of the reaction, I knew I was going to have to play like I had won that season and I had to play with the big threats. And the number one threat on my list was Tony. I used to be a journalist and my big thing was crime reporting. Mm-hmm. And I always had the best rapport with the cops and I wanted to be Tony Spencer. I really, really did. And I got out on that beach and I realized off the bat, like, oh no, like people, like Sandra's claws are in. That woman is unbelievable. Even how she keeps her social circles after the game, mm-hmm. it's stunning. I mean, I wanted to work with Tony and I went up to Sandra the first day and I said, hey, Sandra, I've kind of gotten the vibe that you don't want to work with me. It had kind of gone back to me that she was telling people, there's a co wrong four and Aubrey should be first.
Yes.
And I said, I know there are four of us. I know that like I'm perceived as a threat, but that's why I want to work with you. And she so much has said to me like, okay, I'm willing to listen, but it's nothing personal. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh God, that's not good.
Yeah.
This is not good at all. And so I wanted to work with Tony, but oh, he just made people so paranoid and it just kind of all, it all kind of blew up. I mean, those first days on Mana were some of the most lonely days of my like life. They really were. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly difficult. Like there's this, there's a great story about Sandra out there. I'd been talking to Sierra Easton and I really liked her, but it was getting back to me that people thought we knew each other from before.
Yeah,
and
why?
I don't know. I'd never spoken to Sierra before. I think we kind of are like a similar height and both have dark hair and we kind of look like we could be related or something to people. I don't know what it was, but she quickly realized, Sierra realized that people were kind of putting us in a duo and that had happened to her with kind of Wentworth and Abby, I think in 31. And so she went to Sandra and I realized like, great, I'm fully cemented on the Tony side now because I talked to Tony and no one else will talk to him. And now I have Sandra coming at me harder. So we went to prepare the food and Sandra looks at me and she says, Aubrey, you were really close to people in your season, like Ty. You were very affectionate to them. Go give Sierra Easton a hug. Like you mean it. Can you do that? In front of the whole tribe. So Sandra made me hug Sierra Easton like I meant it in front of everybody.
Why? Was this like some sort of like hazing ritual where we need to see if you can do it?
Yeah, I think Sandra was trying to get in my head because I was speaking to Tony and I was like that odd duck with Caleb was also talking to Tony. I was like, okay. And then Sierra says, Aubrey, the rice is ready. Portion out the food in front of everyone. And this is like on day two.
Yeah.
So I went and I gave everybody two scoops on the bamboo and then I left the bamboo on the crate and I was like, you're not playing food games with me. Mm-hmm. But it was very clear from that moment on that I had been talking to Tony and I was sneaky and people didn't want to work with me.
Right.
Wow, that's an intense story of what was going on Survivor Game Changers. It's a tough crowd from the jump there on Survivor Game Changers. But that's a really great interview with Aubrey back from May 29th, 2017. Aubrey ended up coming back with us on RHAP during the fall of 2017 during Survivor Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers. And Aubrey ended up being a guest with Josh Wiggler and I in the Wiggle Room during the second week of Survivor HHH. Here's Aubrey, Josh, and I on October 9th, 2017, talking about how JP Hilsebeck, remember him, was defining power couples back in episode number 2 of Survivor HHH. We're going to start off with a clip of JP talking about the power couples.
I don't see ourselves as a power couple at all. We're not dating, we're not hooking up, we're not doing any of that type of stuff. I mean, if we're a power couple, you mean, might as well be hooking up and being a couple, you know what I mean? Might as well take advantage of everything.
I mean, Josh, that's a good point. I mean, if you're going to be in a power couple with everybody and people think you're going to be in a power couple, you might as well hook up with that person because then you're not taking advantage of the fact that people already think you're in a power couple.
I think that JP genuinely thinks that when he is being asked if he's in a power couple with Ashley, I'm not kidding. I genuinely think that he thinks that he's being asked if he's in a relationship with Ashley. That was the impression that I got from hearing him field those questions at that first tribal council. None of that stuff made it to air. I think that he really believes that the concept of the power couple on Survivor is of only like the Boston Rob and Amber mold, that it is truly a romantic partnership on the show. So maybe that helps explain what he's talking about there a little bit more and things like that.
Yeah, well, that makes some sense. I mean, Aubrey, I mean, if people are going to accuse you of being a couple with somebody, then why not just get together with them?
Joe could have been my Hugh Hefner. Yeah, I never knew. Just never knew. Never knew.
God forbid. Oh, no.
The late great
Hugh Hefner.
I have to say, like, I think the casting on the season is really impressive. Like, I'm watching it, and JP was clearly meant to be on a tribe with an Alan, and Warren was like tailor-made to be Patrick's nemesis. Like, it's just so good. Like you can feel like people are, it's like that game Perfection. People are like slowly popping into their spaces and then they'll get there and then it's going to pop and the whole thing's going to blow up after enough time and people are hungry enough. It's so good.
I think that was our first really great patented Aubrey Bracco analogy that we got today, Josh.
Ryan has nothing
on
me.
It was great.
Yeah. Sorry, bud.
I thought that the sad birthday party thing at Tribal, like, you were really reaching there, Ulrich. Like, I felt like that was a reach.
We bonded so well together, and I feel like it's a birthday party that your mom kind of makes you go to, right? And you don't like the kid whose birthday party it is.
I don't get it. Josh, Rob, can you please explain to me? But I've had a lot of, like, blanks that I've shot in the analogy world. You can ask who wrong. But, like, somebody please break it down for me. I don't understand still.
But, I mean, I get that it's fun to speak in analogy and fun to speak in metaphor, and that stuff often does make it onto the show, so it behooves you to speak those ways if you can, but not everything has to be compared to something else. Like, the sad birthday party, like, that's not going to land. You know, birthdays are happy. It's like the one thing that we still have that's still genuinely, truly happy. No one can relate to that,
Ryan.
I'm sorry.
It just goes to show you how well he's doing, because if Patrick said that same exact thing, he would have gotten, like, the idiot music underneath that. And everybody was like, what are you talking about?
Immediately. Yeah, vote it out. Vote it out for that. Like, okay, the Tribal is live, and you have changed our collective opinion.
You have to be careful with those analogies, though, because I get the feedback after Ko-Rong that people get irritated. Hated listening to me.
The players or the audience?
No, players in Tribal Council. You got to be careful. And I also think it has something to do with the fact that when people know that Jeff is going to come to you for an answer and you have something creative or quirky or quippy, I mean, especially in Game Changers, everyone's thinking, all these people are like, airtime. So you kind of can become a threat if your analogy game's too strong. Just saying, you reserve that for the Oregon Trail when you're crying alone in a confessional.
Smart. It's a great clip of Aubrey talking about her world famous analogies. And I have to give credit to Mary Kwiatkowski, who alerted me to that clip when she and I did the deep dive talking about Aubrey's first two games in the Aubrey Story So Far podcast that we posted last week. Okay, so we're going to go from here to listen to a clip that I am actually not on. So this was from December 22nd, 2017, and there was a LFC roundtable, and they'll do these from time to time, the Big Brother LFC of Taryn and Brent and Melissa, and they will do some coverage about Survivor here and there. So after the Survivor HHH finale, there was some controversy about not just Chrissy versus Ben, but about the final four fire-making twist. And so Taryn and Brent got on to talk about it on a podcast, and they invited Aubrey Bracco to be on the show. Aubrey, earlier in 2017, had been on a Big Brother podcast with Taryn. She did an episode of the Taryn Show with Taryn, so there was a relationship there. And so Aubrey, Taryn, and Brent were talking about this big decision that the jury reached, and noted Chrissy Stan Brent may have met his match when he got into it with Aubrey Bracco about whether Chrissy lost just because the jury was bitter. This was from December 22nd, 2017.
That aside for a second, because I'm so annoyed at the other thing. Like, here's the thing. Okay, I'm the child of a combat vet, and I'm a vet myself. I did not feel great about Ben bringing up PTSD in front of the jury in order to garner votes. There, I said it. I didn't like it. I felt like it was icky, and I can't believe that the jury actually voted for the person who he is outside of the game rather than the person who he is inside of the game. Because
you should have said the stuff that Sarah Lucina said, and she would acknowledge it to you, and I think she is one of the best winners of all time. Underrated, because as she says, I'm really boring on camera.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying.
Look, it may not have been, he may not have intended to do that, but the result was the same. And I mean, Taryn, did you feel great about that?
Well, here's the interesting thing. I felt like the jury was basically prompting him to do it. Or that's the feeling that yes. I got because he gave his final speech, which was like
which was
pretty
terrible.
Bad. And the, and I don't remember who it was. I think it may be Joe or Devin was like
Joe.
Yeah, it was like hey, we were kind of expecting more from you, Ben. Like we were hoping for like you know the Jeremy Collins or something. Like give us something emotional here. And that's when Ben was like I don't know what else to say.
I'm here for emotional. My family. That's the thing. He never spoke to anything he really did in the game. And why is that? Because he had no agency in the game, Taron Armstrong. He had no agency in the game whatsoever. Okay. See, so instead, he's like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to talk about my family. I'm here for my family. This money could be really good for me and my folks. I mean, like, you know, my kids could use this to go to college. I've never had this much money in my life. I'm here for my family. That's what I've been doing this for this entire time. That's all he talked about. Okay. You go back and watch that. There's not an iota of social game or strategy there. There just isn't. Okay. And I feel
there's
like
more to this story then. Because okay, well then, they all then, wanted him out. They all wanted him out for episodes before the finale. He clearly was a strong player. Like, I don't know how all of a sudden.
I think he was a strong personality.
Final twist. Like, Ben had no game. They were all saying he's going to win the game if he gets to the end. He's going to win the game. Guess what? He won the game. They all knew it. Chrissy was a great player and knew he would win it. Devin knew he had to go too. Ashley was talking about blindsiding him weeks ago. You can't say he had no game. That's just complete BS.
Okay, I won't say he had no game. I just think that here's the thing. I think that he is stronger as an avatar for them within the game. And what I mean by that is they're like, okay, well, this person has a story and we need to make sure that they're out of the game. Because if that kind of person gets to the end, we know that that kind of person typically gets a lot of votes. And that's why, that doesn't mean that him specifically was doing anything great within the game.
They were talking about him as a threat in the game, not because he was a Marine.
Well, I mean, like, it's sort of like if you damned if you do and damned if you don't. I mean, they were trying to get him out at the final eight, but after the final eight, they never had a point where they could get him out.
Exactly.
I mean, they voted for him like what, 3-4 straight times, Taron? And like, they just can't get him out of the game. So
that's impressive to me. I'm sorry. I think that's friggin' impressive.
So you really
just
think
like it was impressive? Like, I was always on the bottom and I took my shit and I took care of it.
That finding immunity idols. It's fine. You can be that way. I like because I'm that way. Like, I mean, like, you really think that like rummaging around in the dark and finding a necklace with some shells on it is as important as having agency and control in the game and winning immunity challenges? I just can't find that.
How all of a sudden is work ethic and scrambling to find something you know is out there all of a sudden not important? Because I was told that all these things about how I played and how I wasn't social, and everyone says you didn't have a bitter jury because some people value something more than other. Maybe the jury valued someone scrambling in the dark more than they did immunity challenges.
It's certainly possible. I guess I'm here saying that they shouldn't. Okay. So, I mean, that's my issue. You know, like,
they shouldn't. But isn't the whole thing online now with like Ko Rong and this drama where it's become like Michelle and I are friends, but we're like not even people anymore? Isn't it become this whole thing of like, we can't say a jury is bitter because everyone values something differently? Like, isn't that the common knowledge?
I mean, like, I feel like it's okay to say a jury is bitter. And yeah, I want like if you know that a jury is going to be bitter, like if Michelle's like, you know what? I know that these jurors do not like Aubrey and I am going there. So I know she probably played a better game on paper, but I'm going to take her because I feel like I can beat her because I don't. That's what happens at Big Brother. People take people to the end because they got a bitter jury. You know, like Josh is going to go to the end. You know what?
I save myself with fire.
Paul is the better player, but I'm going to take Paul to the end because I feel like that the jury is more likely to be bitter against Paul. And you know what? He was totally fine winning that way. So what the hell is Michelle's problem? That she's like, I don't want to win the game with a bitter jury. Hell yeah. Give me the $1 million with a bitter jury. I'll take that any day of the week. Like, seriously, like that is like the ultimate. Like, that is the ultimate triumph to me. You know what? I won because of a bitter jury. Like, those people were so pissed off that they still voted for my dumb ass when I was up there. Like,
oh my God, I want you to play so bad.
This is amazing. I literally
don't ever get this heated either. People do not see this Aubrey when it comes to
I warned Taron ahead of time. I'm like, you really sure you want to be on with me? Because I don't know.
Everything I hope to be.
Nervous. I know. I have a sassy side, but I save that for my confessionals. Not whispering in front of people and mocking their intelligence in front of me, Chrissy, when I'm playing with them. Sorry. I save the S talk for when I'm
on a walk.
And Brent has been known to get a lot of people worked up. Good job there by Aubrey, holding her own as she is battling it out with a very fired up Brent day after the HHH finale. Okay, so we got just saw the heated side of Aubrey. I got one more Aubrey clip, which I think is a really fun one. It comes from the last time we had Aubrey on the podcast. It was April 8th, 2018, and this is probably going to be about 5 or 6 weeks before she's about to go play in Survivor 38. She was here again to do the Survivor 36 voicemails here during Survivor Ghost Island. I believe this is after episode number 6 of Survivor Ghost Island, and we end up taking a voicemail which talks about a product for which there is a commercial on television. Let's go back to the feedback show from April 8th, 2018 with Aubrey. All right, I've got kind of an out there question for you.
Do you know this is the girl? Just call me up the out there.
All right, this is McAllister from Florida has a question for us.
Hey, Rob. McAllister from Florida. Have you seen that Hunter Ellis from Survivor Marquesas is the spokesman for a product called the Atomic Lighter? You can check out the video on YouTube. It's pretty funny. Just wanted to know if you're aware of it. And hey, Aubrey, you're the best. Thanks. Bye.
Okay.
Can you remind me who Hunter Ellis is, please? All right. Sorry, Hunter Ellis.
Hunter Ellis was from Survivor Marquesas, season number 4, and he was somebody who the Brendan Shapiro of his time. He looked to be the leader of his tribe,
yeah.
And then he was done in by a ambitious young man from Boston named Rob Mariano, and so he was a fighter pilot or a flew for FedEx.
Okay, I know who you're talking about now.
And so that apparently, according to McAllister from Florida, he is the spokesperson for a new as seen on TV product called the Atomic Lighter.
Let's see it.
And he wants us to look at the commercial.
All right.
And so here is Hunter Ellis, found on YouTube, Hunter Ellis for the Atomic Lighter.
Lightning, one of the most powerful forces in nature that can create fire. Now harness the power of lightning in the palm of your hand. Hi, I'm Hunter Ellis, and that's why I always carry the Tactical Atomic Lighter.
I'd like to mention that Hunter Ellis is surrounded by tiki torches also.
Oh, my.
Is he the spokesperson for the Atomic Lighter because fire represents life?
Wow. And
I really feel like that there was a Survivor tie-in here.
You think?
Yeah.
He's even wearing, like, a different color, but the same, like, Columbia shirt Jeff would. Oh, also, did you see the Columbia logo this week? Intriguing.
Yeah, and also, I feel like that Ben Dreebergen needs to fire his agent. I think that he really could have come in and been the spokesperson for the Atomic Lighter.
Oh, 100%. I want to see Ben in this.
Yeah. Are you guys ready?
Should we just church this up?
Yeah, get the Atomic Lighter right now.
So entertaining.
All right, here's
to me,
the back to Hunter Ellis.
The fuel-free, rechargeable lighter that works anywhere.
He literally lights
anytime.
A torch.
The secrets are lightning bolt technology. Just watch how quickly this incredible new plasma technology creates fire. Gas or butane. Just press the button and it lights the first time, every time. You get over 100 lights on a single charge. And it's rechargeable by USB, so it's always good to go. From lighting birthday candles to cleaning up the end of a rope or firing up a stogie, it's the best. If you need fire, you need the Atomic Lighter. There's no flint, so even if it gets wet, it lights.
No flint, and even if it gets wet, it lights.
That looks like the dock in Karamoan.
Yes, you think that they went to the Karamoan to film this commercial?
I feel like Don's teeth are going to pop out at any moment.
Wow, Hunter Ellis. Now, the amazing thing about the Atomic Lighter, this is I read up on this, the genesis of this on the Wikipedia. So originally it started out, it was just a regular lighter, but it went to Ghost Island for 10 years and it came back that it is now has the powers to be an atomic lighter.
Oh, my gosh, Rob. Wait, what year was Marquesas?
It was in, I believe it aired in the spring of 2002.
Oh, so it's even longer than 10 years. It's evolved even yes, further.
Yes. And then it went from a regular lighter to like a Zippo. And then it finally became its full adult atomic lighter.
And then it had an invisibility cloak and it burned the Malolo flag. And yes, we didn't even see it. It's been there the whole time.
Yes. Okay. Now, Aubrey, you work in marketing. Are you on board? You like the thumbs up on the commercial?
Sure.
Yes. The sharks, the sharks would say
RSV. Sure. Good. I'll lighter. I love it. Good job, guys. Good luck.
Good job, guys.
Good job, Hunter. Good job.
Yes.
Good job.
If only the Malolo tribe would have had the atomic lighter earlier.
We burned it. Curse is gone. We burned it.
Yeah, I'm not sure Barbara would have invested in that one.
Yes. She would be out on the atomic lighter.
Thanks.
Need a better spokesperson?
Oh, yeah, just get my boss.
Like, what? Who is this guy?
Get my boss, Saban, who's going to be on the cooking channel.
Yes.
For a lighter.
The third boot from Survivor 17 years ago.
Jeez. Wow. What a pick.
We couldn't get Brendan Shapiro.
I remember thinking he was handsome, though, when I was like 16. Ooh, yeah. How old was I? Never mind. Move on.
All right. Sadly, we will move on from our highlights of Aubrey Bracco on Rob's podcast. Aubrey is a really great guest on the podcast because that she can be serious. She can talk about the game. She is a great storyteller. Of course, analogies galore. She can be funny. So I am very excited to see Aubrey back on the show, and also very fun. Hopefully one day we'll have her back on the podcast and get to talk about it with Aubrey. Okay. I know some of you guys might be wondering, do we have Joe Anglim clips? And yes, indeed, we do. We do have Joe Anglim clips of Joe Anglim's appearances on the podcast, because I have a clip here. This is from when Joe Anglim, we first got to see Joey Amazing during Survivor 30 Worlds Apart. We're going to hear from Joe Anglim back in my original exit interview with him from April 16th, 2015. And what we're going to find out from Joe is, you know, if he could have done anything differently, would he have gone all out on those challenges that he started winning back at the merge of Survivor Worlds Apart from April 16th, 2015? Now, if you could have had this whole post-merge to do over again, would you have tried as hard to win the challenges, or would you have done it the same way because they're coming for you no matter what?
Yeah, Rob, you know, but I knew as soon as that first challenge, when I unfortunately killed the puzzle, and, you know, I knew that's just where I was at in the game. Like, I knew they were coming. And, you know, you observe people. I mean, everyone's watching everyone in the challenges. Who's doing well? Who's not doing well? And, you know, it, unfortunately for me, I love the game. I couldn't help it. I played too hard. So, but, I'm pretty sure if I don't win that first immunity challenge, it's an 11-1 vote, hands down. I mean, they're coming for me. So, or at least another split vote. I'm thinking maybe, you know, I have an idol or something.
Okay, so there was Joe, April 2015. Little did I know that Joe would be almost immediately back in the running to return to Survivor later on in that same year in the Second Chance season. But unfortunately for Joe, that he has a similar game plan. And now, instead of winning the first two challenges at the merge, I think he wins the first four immunities to start off the merge before eventually his number is going to come up. And Joe and I talk, and we even discuss the idea, or my ideas, for maybe what Joe should do differently if he ever returns to Survivor. This is from Joe's exit interview from December 3rd, 2015. Joe, let me commend you, first of all, because I didn't think that you would be this deep into the game. I thought that you would be, because you're such a target, I thought you would be out early.
Pre-merge, I believe.
I did. I thought so. I thought so, too. And it wasn't because Stephen Fishback told me ahead of time that he was gunning for you. I didn't even know that you were so high on his radar. But that being said, that here you are. You make it into the 30s, day 30s in this game. But can a player with a target as big as yours ever win this game in the new school era of Survivor?
Oh, Rob, that's the question of the season.
I think I can. I think it really, I mean, I had a pretty good shot at winning this season, I would say. I think there's a little bit of that luck involved. I think there's a little bit of, you know, the players I was with, the ripple effect, and what you're able to accomplish in an hour or a day of strategizing. So I think it's there. I probably would have needed to not play as hard and just, you know, maybe give 60%, you know, 50-60%. But ultimately, I don't know. It's hard for me to do. I'm super competitive, and I want to go out there, like, you know, like Keith was saying, and compete. So the odds are not in my favor. I mean, there's definitely a chance, but I don't think I got good odds in Vegas. Let's put it that way.
Joe, bring me in. Let me be your Survivor coach, because I'm telling you, here's what we need to do. Gain 40 pounds. Gain 40 pounds and steer away from the curve. Give nothing in the challenges. Be the first one out of every challenge.
Exactly. Or just pull a Fabio and just mumble fart my way through everything and pretend, make myself seem as less threatening as possible.
How about Joey Amazing there with some Fabio shade? Now, I said, Joe, let me be your Survivor coach. And no, I'm not talking about the guy who is the Dragon Slayer, but bring me in. And I did not hear from Joe before Survivor 38. So he obviously did not gain the 40 pounds like I told him to. He did come back with the mustache. So I don't know if that's part of the plan. But I do have one other clip of a time that Joe Anglim was on the podcast. And maybe only the RHAP ride or dies might remember this. This third time that, just like he's playing for the third time, this third time that Joe Anglim was on Robert's podcast, it comes at the Survivor Millennials versus Gen X finale. I was doing red carpet interviews there for the podcast. I was actually joined in person by Kim Spradlin, who was co-hosting the RHAP red carpet interviews with me that night. And Joe Anglim was doing the interviews for CBS.com. And so after it was all done, Joe, who has always been super friendly to me, came on over and we got to get some words from Joe about the Survivor Millennials versus Gen X finale. Here is Joey Amazing on the night of December 14th, 2016. There's Joe Anglim. How's it doing, Joe? Joe, you want to run through here? Can we talk before we sign off? Here's Joe Anglim.
Hello.
How you doing, Joe?
I'm awesome, man. Yes. I was so excited for the finale tonight.
I mean, how could you not be?
And it exceeded expectations, right?
Like, far beyond anything I even could imagine. Yeah. I actually thought Hannah was going to maybe pull it, but I thought she might have had, I thought she had like an Aubrey thing kind of happening where it was just her confessionals were amazing, but no one saw her gameplay.
I think you're right.
That's kind of where I was at, but I don't know. Regardless, freaking amazing season. So proud. I'm really good. I've been traveling a lot and hanging out with Kelly Wiggles and her little son Rio.
When is the show coming on?
Soon.
What is the show?
So me and Kelly had this amazing, crazy idea to travel around the world and kind of just take our time and living life with cultures and tribes. And
I didn't know about this.
Yeah, it's a new thing.
Wow.
It's a new thing, Kim.
Do we know what it's called?
It's called Mana. As of right now, it's called Mana.
M-O-N-O.
M-A-N-A.
M-A-N-A.
I guess wrong.
Mana.
Mana.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Movement, action, nature, adventure.
Congrats. That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's all happening, Kim.
It is happening. Yeah. It's happening all the time.
Yeah. I just don't know.
You just got to get in it or be a part of it.
Yeah.
So, well, essentially it's just, you know, we have all these ideas that we talked about on the show and me and her thought about creating a show together and now we're doing it. We're just making it happen. So we have a lot of concepts, ideas, core values, kind of things that we learned on the show, maybe about getting back to your core, I'm getting unplugged, getting back to your family values, core values. So we got a lot of things we're talking about.
I'm excited.
Yeah, getting people out there. You know, the world's beautiful and big and there's a lot to see and do. And the only way to go see it is to go see it. So
how I live my life, Kim.
I don't know.
I don't know. I think, I don't know, bro. I mean, well, no, but he's got green screens. He's got like cool, he can go, he's like Fiji. He's going to go like Cambodia. Beirut. Yeah.
Don't need all right. That.
Well, they're going to kick us out of here real soon. So I just wanted to say hi. No, I guess we have Joe with us. We can do whatever we want.
No, I was going to say we have Bert with us.
Okay. Yeah.
No one knows who I am.
No, they are going to kick us out soon. All right. So thanks everybody who watched all this. If you want more, subscribe. RobinsonWebsite.com/iTunes. Thanks so much for watching and listening.
Watch his podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe. Check out Joe's stuff on CBS.com. And check out Kim's stuff somewhere.
No, you'll never see it.
You'll never see it. All right. Thanks so much. Take care, everybody. Bye.
All right. That was how we ended the show that night with Joe Anglim. Got the plug in for Mana. I think that Mana is officially on hiatus for the time being. Not sure if that may ever end up getting launched, but we're ready for it whenever it comes out. How about Joe talking about he thought that Hannah was going to win because that she was giving the Aubrey vibe. So maybe some positive feelings towards Aubrey going in for Joe, and that's going to be important to watch because they are going to be on the same tribe here in Survivor 38. Now, since we're already there on the night of December 14th, 2016, let's go back to earlier that same evening when I got the chance to talk to David Wright on the podcast for the very first time. And of course, he made it to the final four, gets voted out during that finale episode. And Kim and I had a chance to talk to him on the red carpet for the first time on the podcast about his game. Here is David Wright, fresh off of coming out of the finale of Millennials versus Gen X, December 14, 2016.
Hi, everybody. We are here now with a man we can call an honorary survivor know-it-all at this point. David Wright is here. David, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's so great to be here and talk to you guys. You know, this is insane. Like, I've been listening to Rahap for years.
Yes.
And to be standing here holding a microphone with you about to ask me questions about the game I played as Survivor, I can't wrap my head around it.
Yes. Well, David, I feel Kim can't relate to what we've been through.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
right. Yes. I related a lot to your game.
You were right there.
Your first game. Yeah.
You were right there. Everybody said that you should have been the winner.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then... Gone.
Yeah, and you know exactly what that's like.
Yes, yes.
All right. Well, how are you coping?
I'm doing fine. Honestly, you know,
it's been hard.
It's not been hard at all. I mean, to be honest, no one's going to believe this, and I swear to God, I said this as soon as I got voted out. That when I got voted out, and I really did try to win, but when I got voted out, I felt a huge sense of relief that I didn't get there, because I think I maybe would have won the million, and I just had, like, undergone all this personal growth that I feel like throwing $1 million on top of that would have complicated it and done damage to it. That said, if I would ever go back again, I'm ready for the million dollars.
You would want to win. Now you're mature enough to handle the $1 million win.
Yeah. How do you handle winning on the first time?
You have to have incredible maturity and incredible depth. No, I just think that's amazing perspective, because so many people do, you know, just relive it over and over and over again. So I'm just amazed.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, you know, maybe people would kick themselves, or you can speak to this, but to make it to 38 days of 39 day game, I felt like a tremendous sense of accomplishment, because I never believed I was ever going to make it that far.
So we're actually going to stay with David right here and skip ahead to later on in that conversation from the Millennials versus Gen X finale. And we're going to get to hear David Wright talk a little bit, of course, that we got to see in that episode when he made his famous fake idol and got Jay to play it at the final six. Here's David Wright talking about exactly how he pulled that off from that same interview.
David, that aside, you really had an incredible episode tonight here, starting from the final six, when you have this idea to make a fake hidden immunity idol.
Yeah.
And one of the best that we've seen on Survivor. Not only that, you got a coconut car, like, whatever you did to it, put it out in play, put paint on it, and created, like, one of the most realistic toy idols that we've ever seen in the show. And then it was such a great scene when Jay is like, these dummies don't even know I've seen it. I mean, what was running through your head during all that?
Oh my God.
I think he saw it.
Yeah, I did. I remember walking along that path, and then I'm like, I think he saw. And then we got back to camp, and Jay was like, "Oh, you know what, guys? I'm gonna go get some water." And I had hit it by the well, and I'm like, "I got him! I got him!" And it was, you know, like, honestly, to pay off so well, because going into the game, that was my plan, to plant a fake immunity. I'll just have a little fun with the game, and I was so happy to see it work.
Okay, yeah. I have a question. How'd you get the coconut to stick back together?
It's amazing, actually. So we had so many coconuts, right? There's so many coconuts. I was like looking for just the right one, and I found this one coconut. It almost looked like someone had drilled a hole in it. It was a small kind of hole, but I was able to just force the idol in.
Inside.
Yeah, so I never had to split it open.
Okay. It was amazing. You did the whole thing at night. You had paint
with your own fire.
Yeah.
You had your own little fire with your workshop.
Well, it was really incredible.
It was so involved. They didn't even show it because I made it. I used pink paint, but to do that, I had to mix red and white because I wanted to use paint color that wasn't available at camp. And then I woke up like with all this pink paint all over myself, and I was like Lady Macbeth, like trying to like wash all the blood off. Exactly.
All right, so David was great on the exit interview that we did at the finale, but he was kind enough to come on into the studio a couple of weeks later, and he came on out here on January 12th, 2017. We did a whole long-form interview about his game in Millennials versus Gen X in the studio, and so I pulled this clip of David talking about a move that I had said during the season that I was not a fan of. David, earlier in that exit interview that we just heard, said he felt like that was his best move of the season when he played the idol on Jessica Lewis. And Shannon Gates and I talked about this conversation in the Story So Far podcast that we did last week. But here is David Wright himself talking about the move that he made when he played his hidden immunity idol on Jessica Lewis pre-merge in the Gen X tribe. This is from January 12th, 2017.
So you were sort of wrestling with this decision, but what happened at that tribal council that made you pull the trigger on making this move?
You know, it was just mainly about removing people from the game that I didn't trust or who didn't trust me, and keeping people in the game who I felt I could build trust with and you know, could work together going forward. I did believe that a tribe swap was imminent. And so I know not everybody likes the move. But I felt like, you know what, just thinking deeper into the game, better to have people that you trust in the game than people you don't.
And I disagreed with the move at the time. But when we spoke back on the red carpet, you said that this was, you thought, your best move in the entire game.
I do. Because at least for me, you know, not for some other people, but, I really, all you want in that game is trust. And I felt that that gave me the trust I needed from Jessica, and it made me feel good about talking to Jessica. I knew Jessica probably wasn't going to keep me or let me last till final three, but I felt like I could go pretty deep with the trust I had with her, and obviously the trust I had with Ken. So other people in the game, I told them I trusted them, but I really didn't.
So I know it worked out very well for you doing that. Do you think that in a vacuum that more people should be looking at using the idol in that way of potentially, instead of just holding it to save it for yourself, using it on an ally earlier in the game to keep somebody that you have a relationship with in the game versus somebody you don't?
I do. I actually think it's better to use the idol on other people because in a game of trust, that absolutely solidifies the relationships that you have with that, or the relationship that you have with that other person. Obviously it puts a target on your back, but at the same time, once you play the idol, they know you don't have one, and it's like, okay, we don't need to worry about David as much anymore. He wasted it. It's gone. But I stand by the move.
Yeah. It's a good point that when you play the idol for somebody else and you get it right, a lot of things happen where, you know, that other person will feel positive feelings towards you. And also the idea of that, oh, he has an idol is sort of reduced because you obviously have just played it and it's something that's positive for your alliance. There's also other downsides of other people saying like, oh, would he have played an idol on me? Or, you know, why didn't he play an idol on me when I was potentially in trouble on this night? Or if he had it last time, you know, why didn't he use it before? But I do think that you make a lot of good points in terms of, I think that probably people that watch this season, future players, I think we'll see
more idol plays happening because that this season was just so dominated by that.
Yeah, and it's really player dependent because, you know, you could make that same move in another season with other players and it could completely backfire. So you just never know, really.
I think that's really important what David is talking about thematically about trust, that we know David's game is all about who can he trust versus who he can't trust, willing to play idols on his allies, something I'm sure that we'll be thinking about as we go into Survivor 38. So that was January 2017. We'd hear from David Wright again. He filled in for Stephen Fishback on the Know-It-All during Survivor Game Changers, one of two times that he filled in for Steven on the Know-It-Alls. We're going to skip ahead to October of 2017. And I did something that was, you know, a bit of a big swing. And sometimes you take a big swing and we'll see, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You got to make big moves. And so I hosted the Survivor Match Game. And actually, both David Wright and Aubrey Bracco were on the panel for the Survivor Match Game that we hosted at the Hollywood Improv. The video's up on YouTube if you're brave enough to watch it. But during, having a lot of fun, everybody's having some drinks. David Wright noted a big beer fan, but I guess the show was running a little long, and David Wright runs into a problem here during the Survivor Match Game, which was on October 6th, 2017, and we'll let David tell you about what's going on during the match game.
David, how are you feeling?
You skipped Hannah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm bouncing around now.
Oh, sorry. Same person.
I have to pee, but I can hold it.
You can hold it. Yeah, Hannah, you doing good?
I'm great. Thanks for asking.
Okay, Zeke.
I'm fabulous.
Yeah.
What's the statistical probability that this game would change if David left to go pee? Like, how much would it impact the chance of one of these guys getting a match?
Yeah, I mean, I guess at this point, now do you need? Is it an emergency?
No, I'm going to make it through.
You'll be okay?
We'll see.
There's another round after this.
We both have to pee, and we agreed that we're at a four right now.
Yeah, it's a four.
Okay.
A four out of five or out of ten?
Out of ten.
Out of ten. All right.
They really are on the same page.
All right.
4 out of 10 is not that bad, but later on, David Wright is on the verge of a medical evacuation, but some kind of an evacuation, and so here's David Wright later on during the Survivor Match Game.
And David, what's the pee situation?
It's not good.
It's not good?
Oh. But you know what?
Do you want to go?
I'm not leaving the situation.
Give us a number, dude.
Yeah, give us a number.
Seven, approaching eight, but that's
whoa. Eight. Whoa. Zeke, eight.
He's going on stage.
What number Zeke at? What number
out of
you
10,
at?
Out of 10.
I'm at a 6.5. I'm not as bad as Dave.
Really?
Give me a glass.
Maybe I'm just sitting wrong.
See, I switched to cocktails, so I didn't keep drinking beer. Okay. That's why I'm better.
Why don't you go? We have 1 minute before we're gonna come back.
We'll time you.
You're not gonna time me, are you?
No. Yeah. Well, I'm not gonna time you. I can't say
Dave,
what
you're nimble.
Somebody
go.
Listening to the podcast is gonna do.
Okay, but really, I can actually go pee right now.
Yeah, go. Not
go.
Right here.
Go. Go.
Go.
Go.
Do it.
Go. 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 Unzip.
You got it, Dave. Dig deep.
I like the pity applause for David right there going to the bathroom there by the audience. You hear Aubrey a couple times in that clip. Aris is the person who is asking for the pee number along the way. Hannah, Nick Myrano, Zeke, they are on the panel for the Survivor Match Game. The next month, David Wright was going to be okay. He joined me in the studio to recap an episode of Survivor HHH. He was talking about the inclement weather that they had in Fiji for millennials versus Gen X. And he tells us about the way that the Gen X tribe was able to survive during the cyclone that hit during Survivor Millennials versus Gen X. Here's David Wright from November 2nd, 2017. There was the Dalton Ross top 35 greatest moments from the survivors that our own Jessica Lewis mentioned that during the monsoon, that that afterwards, you guys had to all huddle around CeCe's butt because that was the only source of warmth on the island. Is that a true statement? Is that do you recall this?
Yeah, no, I do. I recall that. In fact, that's. That's one of the most memorable moments from the game for me. We were all like
on CeCe's butt.
We were all it's true though. Like we were all just huddled because the rain was coming down. It was like going down the palm fronds and down our shirts. And we're leaning on CeCe for warmth. And Chris Hammonds puts his head in my lap, which it wasn't weird because it's like, oh, thank God his head is so warm. And it's like,
so Chris's head and CeCe's butt combined.
Yeah.
To be this heat pump for the Gen X group.
Warmest place on earth. Yeah, it was that night. If I was ever going to quit, it was going to be that night. It was so hard. And then we didn't sleep at all the entire night. And then it's kind of what led to my paranoia because finally in the morning, the rain went away and we could sleep. And I woke up, I looked up and Chris and Paul were having a very private secret conversation above me. And then of course I got paranoid and well, you saw what happened after that.
Mm-hmm. Then that's you went off to go look for the idol.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-oh. David Wright doesn't like the cold and the rain. And I don't know if CeCe's butt or Chris Hammond's head is going to be on Edge of Extinction Island. So it could be something to watch out for if David Wright ever ends up there. So David Wright talking about CeCe's butt. One of the great moments in Rob is a Podcast history. Okay. I got one last clip for you about David Wright. And this is one that I don't know if a lot of people have heard. And it's a little bit of a subtle callback to something. So on May 2nd, 2018, David Wright once again filled in for Stephen Fishback on the Survivor Know-It-Alls, and very fortuitous timing because just happened to be the night that I booked him for was the night that Dominic Abate ended up finding the David Wright fake immunity idol and had that as something that was in the episode. So we got to talk about that with David Wright here in the studio, but it was something else. I don't know if you want to call it something fortuitous or something that was a goof, but I at the end of the show I started asking David Wright about what he had coming up, like I like to do, give any of the guests an opportunity to plug anything they have coming up, and boy, I didn't know. Really hit the nail on the head. Okay, David Wright, what else didn't we cover?
Oh my gosh, in terms of the episode
or no, just in terms of you?
Oh, in terms of me, hoping, I can't say too much about it right now, but I'm hoping for really big things with my
Survivor 38.
No, not that. No. I would like to play again at some point, but I'm nowhere near ready for that.
Okay.
No, I was actually talking about my animated pilot, which I know I've been talking about for years. I've gotten some good news, but not sure yet. Waiting to hear. So, but. You know, I'll be able to talk more about it later on, hopefully. Okay.
Oof. I felt so bad when I realized what I had done because I did not know when I'm doing the podcast that David Wright is going to be on Survivor 38, and I would never put a guess. We were live on the show, so David Wright had to really think on his feet after that my stupid big mouth ends up saying the thing, and I don't know if he ended up getting, like, if anybody from casting is watching the show, like, hey, David Wright, what are you doing telling everybody that you're going to be on Survivor 38? I did not know. I didn't even know Survivor 38 was going to have returnees at that point. So I felt very bad about that. I saw David this fall and I apologized profusely. Like, oh my God, I'm so sorry that I ended up saying that at that time. But very funny moment in hindsight. And I will have to be more careful in the future future when I have somebody before I know what the future seasons of Survivor are going to be. And that's going to do it for our David Wright section of the best of the Survivor 38 returnees. Before we get into talking about Kelly Wentworth, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are friends over at Tommy John. And look, Survivor players know just how important great underwear can be, because nowadays on Survivor, you don't even get your bathing suit. You're in your underwear for the full 39 days if you're lucky. And that's why Tommy John is so important. And of course, Valentine's Day is coming up. And if your Valentine's Day gift is going to be flowers from the supermarket, drugstore chocolate, send all that stuff to the edge of extinction, because you could rethink a Valentine's Day gift with Tommy John. They've got the most comfortable men and women's underwear on the planet, a gift that's not only unexpected, but genuinely needed. Tommy John is redefining comfort for men and women with luxuriously soft, feather light, moisture wicking underwear that's so important for survivors, that moves with you, not against you. No pinching, no bunching, no riding up, no wedgies. No wonder Tommy John has sold over 6 million pairs. If you're still looking for a Valentine's Day gift, then their limited edition loungewear and underwear, including matching his and hers sets, are the perfect alternative to boring and played out cliche gifts. Last year, the limited edition collection sold out in less than a week, so don't wait until the last minute. And with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear, or its free guarantee, if you don't love your first pair, you'll get a full refund. There's no excuse not to buy the gift of comfort that they truly deserve. Tommy John, no adjustments needed. Shop limited edition Valentine's Day gift sets and get 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Rob. That's TommyJohn, TommyJohn.com/Rob to get 20% off, only at TommyJohn.com. TommyJohn.com. All right, let's talk about our final Survivor 38 returnee, and it's another great one. We are going to talk about Kelly Wentworth, and Kelly Wentworth has a number of RHAP appearances and moments that we're going to talk about here. And the first time I ever spoke to Kelly Wentworth came back on October 23rd, 2014. She just got voted out of Survivor San Juan del Sur. And so in my first exit interview with Kelly Wentworth, you'll hear exactly what went wrong for Kelly that first time around. Little did we know she would go on to be a three-time Survivor player. Here's Kelly in her first exit interview on Rob is a Podcast.
I have a lot of questions about what happened last night. I didn't really understand. You were not on my radar for going home. I thought it was going to be your dad. Was that a shock for you as well?
It actually wasn't a shock. So I knew that it was either going to be me or Baylor going home, just based on conversations that I had had with John and Jacqueline. And I just had that feeling like right before tribal, they weren't really talking to us. They kind of were walking around with their heads down, like, you know, dogs with tails between their legs, like all shamed. And so I knew that it was probably going to be me. A lot of people didn't get to see that, but it really wasn't a blindside by any means.
Because it seemed like, from Missy and Baylor's perspective, they had all the problems with your dad, that Missy was arguing with your dad about making the rice, that Baylor and your dad had beef over her voting for him early on. And, you know, Missy talked about, you know, Mother Bear is going to come out and protect the baby, the baby bear. I guess that makes you Goldilocks, right?
I don't want to be any part of that.
So why'd they come after you?
Well, so here's the thing, Rob, that you maybe don't know, and that everyone is now going to learn. Before the tribe swap, when I was on Hunapu, I was very close with Jeremy and Natalie. And I had mentioned, you know, in a few conversations that I wanted John gone over Drew because I thought he was a bigger threat. Well, Missy caught wind of this and told John that I wanted him out. So here we go, move forward to the tribe swap. And look at who's on the tribe with me, John and Missy, the one person I want out and the one person that basically went behind my back and told him. So, of course, like, why would John not want to vote me out? Like, I was going after him. So that's really what happened.
So this conversation between John and Missy, did this happen while you guys were still on Hunapu, or it happened after the swap when you guys switched to the new tribe?
It happened at Hunapu.
Now, why? Why would she do that at Hunapu?
I have no idea, because I guess she's really close with John. I mean, she literally acted like he was her child. I mean, she'd be making rice way too much, as we know. And she would be saying in this really creepy baby voice, like, John, 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 do you want some more rice? And he'd go, yes, mama. Like, it was so pathetic, Rob. Like, I cannot even express to you. I wish you knew how to deal with out there with all these people that had no freaking clue what was going on.
Okay, that's enough of that story. That got weird. The Missy and John John story. Okay, all right. So that was Kelly Wentworth. And if you would have asked me on October 23rd, 2014, I figured that was probably going to be the last we'd hear from Kelly Wentworth. She got screwed by the swap, and I thought that was that. But we turned the calendar to 2015. And that was at a time when we would do the Miss Survivor competition and the Mr. Survivor competition, where longtime RHAP fans knew that we had a long break. There was no Celebrity Big Brother. We had to fill up the content. And so we had a fan vote of who do you want to be Miss Survivor? Who do you want to be Mr. Survivor? And it turned out to be a good way for players to keep their name out there. And we even had one of our former Miss Survivors, RC St. Amour, that she was able to parlay being Miss Survivor to be invited back for Survivor Blood versus Water. Ultimately, her dad didn't pass the medical and they bring in Candace and John, but that's a whole different story. So here comes Kelly Wentworth, and she makes it into the top three for the 2015 Miss Survivor competition. And so, as part of that competition, I did an interview with all of the finalists. And in these interviews, we would have a talent competition where people would have an opportunity to perform a talent for the audience so that they should be voted either Miss Survivor or Mr. Survivor. And so here is Kelly Wentworth's talent competition performance, where she is going to be sharing some of what people were saying to her on social media at that time.
So, for my talent, I am going to be putting my excellent reading skills to use in this edition of Rap Live, Miss Survivor Mean Tweets Edition.
Okay, here we go. So if you're listening on the audio version, Kelly has a printed out paper, color printer. This is a first. I don't think we've ever had color printing before in the Miss Survivor competition.
Wait for it.
Yes. And she has a phone with a picture of a Twitter bird on it. And you are going to give us some mean tweets for Kelly Wentworth.
Yeah, you ready?
Very exciting.
Yeah, I'm really good at reading, writing, and spelling, so I thought this would be awesome.
Okay.
No hard feelings, anybody. Okay, here we go. Fred would like to tell me, I can't believe I actually liked Kelly a little bit during her brief and unmemorable time on the show. Seriously, when did she get so overrated?
Overrated?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know either. So, you know, someone tell me.
Okay.
Okay. Survivor Ninja. Who the F is Kelly? But I spelled my name right, so thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Lives in Condemnation. Yeah. Kelly's pandering is annoying to me. Her tweets suck. I really hope someone else wins.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Okay.
And last but not least, Rob, in these mean tweets messages. Timster would like to say, Kelly sucks ass, and it's pathetic to spam on Twitter to win some stupid ass award. She can get involved whether she wins or not.
Okay. There you go.
All right.
Those are the tweets from the Kelly haters out there.
Embrace it, baby.
Yes.
Embrace it.
Good. So now, are you worried that you have encouraged the Twitter haters to come at you because you will now read their tweets?
You know what, Rob? I think there was a movie that just came out, and I quote, haters gonna hate, haters gonna hate. So, get away. It's fine.
Yes.
It's fine.
Okay.
You know, it's good with the bad, Rob. It's fine.
They hate us because they ain't us. That's right.
They hate us. They penis. Oh, is that how it went?
And we are really dating this interview from the movie The Interview from December of 2014. That was a whole thing. So there's Kelly Wentworth. And look, the haters versus Kelly Wentworth. It's a story as old as time. And she is always up for the battle. And the haters were getting on her, this campaigning for Miss Survivor. What is she doing? But she would be in the right place at the right time, even though she would lose Miss Survivor to the great Natalie Anderson. She only increased her following, who were very excited about the prospect of a Kelly Wentworth return to Survivor when the unprecedented Survivor second chance voting would open up here in 2015. Here is a clip of Kelly campaigning to have the listeners vote her back into Survivor Second Chances from May 9th, 2015.
Well, so speaking of season one,
yeah.
Do you have any animosity towards Kelly Wigglesworth that you want to be the Kelly W? Because I still maintain that maybe it would have helped me if my name was like Dave and I was on the same tribe as Boston Rob. And Boston Rob didn't have to go through being the Rob that sucks for like a year. That maybe my fortune might have been different in Survivor All-Stars. Are you worried that there could be some ownership over I'm the real Kelly W?
No, absolutely not. You know what? I'm saying to people, I'm like, you need to vote both Kellys. Come on. We want to see two Kellys. It's going to be like Kel squared. It's going to be
Kel squared.
Cool.
Like we both have beef jerky.
I don't know what's going to happen, Rob, but not at all. One
will
of
you have to
gonna
adopt a moniker? Like, will you be blonde Kelly, glasses Kelly?
Well, I tell you, I won't be purple Kelly. So
you don't want that.
Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
No. So
is
all
it true? I heard that you said you want to call Kelly Wigglesworth old Kelly. Is that true?
I would never say that.
Okay.
No, but I have all my campaign stuff has said Wentworth. I know it's still very similar to Wigglesworth, but it's
very
certainly
similar name.
But Rob, it's still a little more different than like Kelly. Because people are tagging me and they're like, voted for Kelly, and it's with a Y and not an EY. And I'm like, okay, homie, did you vote for Kelly Wigglesworth or me? Because you're confusing me. They're like, no, you. I'm like, then spell it right.
Shut your mouth, homie G.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, thank you for the vote, but let's just stick to Wentworth. I think it will be much easier.
All right. So vote Wentworth, not Wigglesworth, or Wentworth and Wigglesworth. If you're confused, I guess you can tell them, but just vote both.
Just vote both Kellys, and that's great. There you go. Problem solved.
So Kelly goes out and plays this great game in Survivor Second Chances. And so I finally get the opportunity to talk to her again on the red carpet on December 17th, 2015. I'm there with Josh Wiggler. He's co-hosting the red carpet with me on the Survivor Cambodia finale. Such a great night. They have that final six tribal council. The two idols get played. Really, really exciting stuff. So we're going to talk with Kelly, and then we're going to hear a moment in this interview where we talk about the vote at the final five, where Kelly has made a fake immunity idol. And we're going to talk about how she played that out at the final five.
And now here she is.
When Underdog Wentworth was my slogan for this Miss Survivor competition. You may know something about it.
Yes.
Weird. Seems to be true in the game as well.
Yes. Wow. Well, Kelly, congratulations on all your success. Look at you. You are all the way here. You were this close to a.
Don't remind me, Rob. Don't remind me.
Is it a sore memory? I mean, you're in good spirits right now.
Okay, Josh. I was crying in the green room, and Kelly Wentworth doesn't cry.
Oh no!
Okay, so
dry eyes now.
But you're the you should have won person. Isn't that fun?
He knows what that's like.
Yeah, I guess. I guess so.
Yeah. Twish. All right, let's go back to the final five tribal council. Okay, so you make this idol, which was really incredible.
Look, Rob, it looked pretty good.
Was that the cast birthday bracelet?
That was separate. No. Oh, am I too far?
You're drifting. You're drifting.
Okay, sorry,
you're
give drifting. This to me. Okay.
Sailing away.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So at the final five, you have this idol, but you give it to Keith. At any point did you think, I don't know if I should give Keith Nail this idol. I don't know if I should let him be in charge of it. Should I, kind of like what Mike Holloway ended up doing with Shireen last season to some degree, should you have held on to the idol? Could you have stood up at tribal council and said, I have an idol. I'm playing it for Keith tonight. Everybody, let's vote Spencer.
Okay. Rob.
Oh, that's really good.
I did think about that.
Okay.
The problem is that I had already played two immunity idols, and that is not how I played my idols. I'm very, like, silent until I need to play.
Sneaky, sneaky.
Sneaky, sneaky. Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, my two idols, I waited till all the votes were done, and then Jeff said anyone have an idol. So I felt like me going into that tribal, and all of a sudden, you know, just, like, causing a whole scene that people wouldn't believe me. So I thought, Keith, it's better for you because no one knows what the hell you're doing in the game. Like, why don't you just say, hey, Jeff, you know, I got this idol here. You know, because it had the note. Like, Rob, it had the note and everything. It had the paper. It looked legit.
And Jeremy had seen idols, too, and knows that they all look different.
That's the whole point. They all look different, and Jeremy knew that. So I thought, God, you know. And then when Keith is sitting in tribal, and I'm looking at him, like, staring at him, just mad. Like, you didn't even try.
Right.
You just laid down and died. Why? Yeah. I'm, like, pissed over here, Rob. I'm so mad. I'm getting worked up right now. Yeah. Like, all I wanted him to do was try. I do love Keith, though, so I'm not upset. But
so that was so interesting to me because I completely remember Keith having the fake idol, and I remember the business with him, and he's, like, trying to trick Jeremy, and Jeremy isn't biting at all. I had forgotten about the part that Kelly made it up. Kelly made a fake idol, which, like David Wright, like Joe Anglum, that she's another person here with something else very sneaky, sneaky up her sleeve. So three of these four returnees have that in their back pocket that they can make a really great and convincing fake Survivor immunity idol. So that bears watching going into Survivor 38. So I don't know what I was thinking. I was really greedy, I guess, during Survivor Cambodia. So I went and I did the interviews on the red carpet. And then I guess I also then did phone interviews with the final six the next day. I don't know why I did this. I mean, this is crazy. And I went to the finale. I watched the finale live. I did interviews. And then the next day, I guess I came home and did more interviews. I guess I loved Survivor Cambodia so much. And so here is me talking with Kelly Wentworth the next morning. And I think what I did was I was asking them questions from the patrons the next day primarily. But here is Kelly Wentworth, and we're talking about the changes in her game in Survivor Cambodia. You know, Kelly, I was also impressed with your social game this season because I felt like that even the people that you weren't particularly close with, because I think that everybody has a good social game with their allies, like everybody is like really friendly with their allies. But even when people that you weren't directly working with, like good things would happen with them, you were always like very quick to congratulate them. Was that something also that you consciously worked on this time around?
Yeah, I knew that part of the reason I lost in San Juan del Sur or went home early was because of my social game. Because I was closed off to relationships with people that I wasn't working with. So this time around, I definitely wanted to have a relationship with everyone. It didn't have to be a huge relationship or super close, but I wanted to have conversations with everyone. I wanted to just constantly, be telling people, like, I just wanted to be involved in their story, whatever that was. So that's definitely something that I came out there wanting to do, and I feel like I did do that.
So Kelly Wentworth would then come back on the podcast a couple of weeks later, and we were going to get to hear her full season retrospective on Kelly Wentworth's sneaky, sneaky Survivor Second Chance story that we recorded on January 14th, 2016. And what we're going to hear about in this clip is Kelly Wentworth's signature moment when she was able to knock Andrew Savage out of the game with her hidden immunity idol play. And what we're talking about here is how the other side was not able to come up with a vote split for a variety of reasons, which opened the door for her to be able to cancel 9 votes at that tribal council. Here is Kelly telling the story of playing the hidden immunity idol against Andrew Savage.
The whole thing doesn't come together. Andrew has said that he had like a spider bite and he's not really feeling great during that time. They can't really get together on splitting the votes. And so they have to decide one of the three of you guys to vote out.
And so, again, this is, tell me if this is urban legend or not. So Joe basically says to you, or at least says to Sierra, who tells you that it's going to be you tonight, right?
That is true. But I think it's unfair for some people to be completely blaming Joe for this plan not coming together, because Keith Nail also was standing on the side of the shelter when I was sitting in the shelter, and he wrote my name in the dirt. Because I said to Keith, I said, who are you voting for? And he wrote my name in the dirt and then wiped it away.
Wait, so I was like, okay. You asked Keith, who are you voting for? And he wrote down your name?
Yeah, in the dirt. Yeah.
Why didn't Keith he point Nail to always, you?
Keith Nail always has Wentworth's back. Even when he votes for me. Still helping the girl
was
out.
Was he trying to help you, or was he just like...
Rob,
did
I don't
not
know.
Lie?
I don't know what he was doing, but it helped me out because I knew that he was voting for me. So,
and did he realize he was talking to you?
He did. Yeah, I said, I looked him in the eye and I said, Keith, who are you voting for? And he wrote my name in the dirt.
Why didn't he use the second person there?
What do you mean?
Like, why doesn't he write you at that point in the dirt that he's talking to you?
Why did? Oh, you? Oh no, I don't know. He wrote Wentworth. I think because I said, what name are you putting down? And I think he wanted to
literally
he was
explain. Yeah.
I think he was practicing writing it. He wanted to spell it right. Yeah. So that happened.
Where he's got like a W-E-N. Are you like, all right, Keith, I get it.
I don't remember exactly, but I do know that Keith Nell was writing my name in the dirt. I don't think he got all the way to, you know, T-H on the last part of my name. I think it was, you know, yeah, it might have been went and then it was wiped away. But
right.
Yeah. So I did not know for sure at that point if they were splitting the votes or not.
Mm-hmm.
All I knew is that I was getting some votes.
Yeah.
And so that's why at Tribal Council, when I play my idol and the fifth name or whatever comes up, you see me looking at Sierra and saying like, funny, because they didn't split it and they're all for me.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Now, huge move. What is that? 9 votes that got canceled out?
Was it 9?
I believe so.
I think it was 9.
9 yeah. votes that got canceled out.
Wow. Oh, boy.
Which is a record.
Yeah.
Malcolm thought it was a little bit show-offy.
Well, you know, I've had words with Malcolm about this.
You guys hashed this out?
Yeah. Yeah.
My theory about it was that, you know, it's like the kind of thing where the votes that they continue to come, you have to like, keep getting a bigger reaction. You can't peak your reaction on vote 6. It's like, yes, mathematically I did it. And then sort of just like sleep through 7, 8, 9.
Well, here's the thing, Rob. I mean, no one's talking about when Tony was clapping when Sarah was voted out. I mean, there have been some huge reactions. Is it just that like a woman can't do it? I don't know. What's going on here? Like, why is that not acceptable? But yes, of course, when you're in that moment and it's like exhilarating to play an idol as it is. And then when you see that every single person was against you except for 2 people.
Right.
Like, of course you're going to be excited because it's, you know, come on. Every person wanted me out except for 2 tiny women.
It's got to be the best feeling in the whole world because it's almost like your significant other or like the police like accuse you of something. And they're trying to and then you like have like the airtight like alibi to show them like, aha, here's the photo of me like not doing what you just accused me of.
Well, that didn't work for Stephen Avery. So
well, he didn't have the airtight alibi.
That's true. That's very true. yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's super exciting because it's not like half the people voted for me and half the people voted Sierra.
Mm-hmm.
Like every single person was against me. And so it was kind of like, you know what? Screw you too. One of you is done. I couldn't help but be excited. I wasn't trying to throw it in Savage's face. And you know, some people on social media were like, oh, those girls were so mean. And until you're in that moment and it's happening to you, like, you know, call me and let me know how you feel.
Yeah, no, it's great. Okay. Great story there by Kelly Wentworth, talking us through all of that and the reaction. I think what she was referring to, or what I was referring to with the Malcolm thing, I think Malcolm was on the podcast and felt like it was a bit much when her reaction kept getting bigger. But at 9 votes, you gotta, you know, you keep ratcheting it up. That's a lot of reacting that you have to do. Another very dated pop culture reference from Kelly Wentworth talking about Stephen Avery. Took me a minute to remember who that was this afternoon as I was going through these clips, listening to them for the podcast. But a really great story. Taking Joe Anglim off the hook a little bit, we had talked about in our story so far about Joe Anglim, about was it Joe who tipped off Kelly about that Idol play, but it seems like that also Keith Nail was involved telling Kelly Wentworth to her face that they were voting for her. So a lot of great stuff. And boy, a lot of Keith Nail stories from Kelly Wentworth. He really is a tricky person to have in the alliance. Okay. All right. San Juan del Sur connection keeps coming back. So Kelly Wentworth ends up coming back onto the podcast in Survivor Millennials versus Gen X. David Wright actually mentioned this interview in his first one out because that Kelly Wentworth was asked who she likes from the season. David Wright seemed upset that Kelly Wentworth did not say that David Wright was her favorite and maybe might think that Kelly Wentworth doesn't want to work with him. We'll see how that works out in season 38. But in that interview, we had a lot of fun going through everything that was going on around the merge in Survivor Millennials versus Gen X. And Kelly Wentworth has a story. Everybody knows that Kelly Wentworth has been in a variety of tough spots, and she tells us the story of something that happened to her recently on the podcast and how she had to get out of that situation. This is from our recap of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X back on November 10th, 2016. I always like to take a look at the Twitter pages of the people that I'm going to talk to on the podcast before they come on. Can you talk about what recently happened with your debit card? Because that sounds like that's probably a good story.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, it's one of those where it's almost like you can't believe that it happened. I'm not sure even really where to start. Basically, so sometimes when I'm using the restroom, you know, you can't just sit in there and what, like stare at my shower curtain. So a lot of times I like to bring in, you know, some sort of tablet or something.
Okay.
And this particular time I had my phone, and I have one of those phones where it has the case. It has the, you know, you can put your cards on the one side. So I have all my cards on one side, my phone on the other. And well, so what happened is that I, you know, stood up and I went to flush the toilet and I grabbed my phone and the cards were loose and a card fell down the toilet and flushed down the toilet. And so it obviously clogged.
So not just in the toilet, it flushed down.
It was gone. I was like waving to it as it swirled. It was like, see you later. Yeah. So so what happened is that I thought, well, you know, I can fix this myself, but I have no expertise in the toilet field. I thought I'm going to call somebody and have them fix it because you can imagine Arlen was very upset with me.
Right.
It's like, how did this even happen? Like what? And I'm like, well, just don't worry about it. I'll fix it. So we called a plumber. He came out. He thought he had fixed it. I didn't think he did. He said he did. Charged me $300. What do you know? The next day wasn't working again. So we had to get our hands a little dirty. I went to Home Depot. I bought all the stuff. I took the toilet off. You got to put the wax ring on.
Yep.
And like, you know, we broke a hose. It was a whole production. And what do you know? The debit card was at the bottom of the toilet. There it was. And I got it out. And now toilet's great.
Okay.
So word to the wise, people. A, don't bring your phone with your credit cards near the toilet because it could happen to you. And B, just fix it yourself. Don't call a plumber. They'll just charge you for shit you can do on your own.
Just goes to show you, never doubt Underdog Wentworth. She's found an idol in a challenge. She's going to stick her arm under the shelter to find an idol, and she will even stick her arms inside of the pipes of the toilet to get out a debit card. She can do it all, that Kelly Wentworth. Okay, I got one last clip for you from that same interview, and I thought this one was a fun one. It's from the portion of the podcast where we started taking questions from the listeners, of course, that over the history of Robin's podcast, I love to get questions in from the listeners with the survivors. And this is one from one of the greatest. Megan Z had a question for Kelly Wentworth about a campaign promise that she had made. And Megan was concerned that Kelly Wentworth might be going back on one of these campaign promises. Now, just again, to reset the date, this is November 10th of 2016. So here is Kelly Wentworth answering Megan Z's question about her broken campaign promise. This is a question from Megan Z. And this is a very interesting question for you that Megan says, Kelly said if we vote her into Second Chance, she would find Colleen Haskell. How is that going? Did you say that?
Well, I think we need to go back and review the tapes because I said if I'm voted in and I win, I'm pretty sure that's what
I
said.
All right, check the tape. Check the.
You better go delete that YouTube video.
Yes. You said it on YouTube.
I'm pretty sure I said if I was voted on and if I bring home the title Soul Survivor.
So that was on YouTube. Sure. You didn't say it with me. You said it in a YouTube video.
Yeah, it was my campaign video.
Okay, and you will find Colleen Haskell. Why? Were people looking for you to find Colleen Haskell? I mean, wouldn't Kelly Wigglesworth have a better chance to find Colleen Haskell?
No, I felt like it was just one of my duties.
Okay.
It felt right. Yeah, it felt right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. So do you have any sort of contact with her, or you were just going to reopen this cold case?
Listen, I'm basically a detective. I was going to start my own podcast, Let's Find Colleen Haskell.
It's like Serial? And I was going
to... Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was going to attempt to find her. But I'll have to review the tape now, too, because now I'm worried. Maybe I said that I would find Colleen if I was voted in, but I would only give trail mix if I won.
Okay. Wow.
Maybe that's what it was.
Going back to the trail mix scandal.
Right.
So what was this video called? Maybe I could just play it.
Let's see.
Kelly Wentworth campaign.
It would just be like Kelly Wentworth second chance or something.
Was it this one?
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Oh, here it is.
Okay.
Hello. My name is Kelly Wentworth, and I'm just like...
But for the record, I don't know if we can do this in the campaign video right now, Kelly. You said we're going to have no politics talk.
Well, this is hardly political, okay, besides the American flag in the background.
All right, fair enough.
When I'm not talking on my AT&T cellular phone, eating Snickers bars, I'm watching Survivor. And I'm going to tell you, America, why I deserve your vote. Firstly, I respect my forefathers, the brave men and women who helped build this beautiful show we love with their lies, deception, and greed. This is for them. Secondly, I'm willing to learn from past mistakes.
Okay, Dale is not invited.
Dale's not invited.
I promise to play with intelligence, intensity, and in a bikini. But perhaps most importantly, if I win the $1 million, I pledge to buy every voter a bag of trail mix. Hell, I even promise to locate the whereabouts of Colleen Haskell.
That's if I won. See, I said if I win the $1 million.
I don't know. Campaign promises already out the window.
Oh my gosh. I said if I win, come on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt on that one.
We've set the record straight here. Thank you.
By the way, the Where is Colleen Haskell podcast, I think, would be fire if we could ever make that happen. Maybe I don't know exactly what resources we can devote to that, but maybe that is a project for the future of whatever happened to Colleen Haskell. Colleen Haskell was America's sweetheart back in the year 2000. After the show, she became a household name by the fall of 2000. She went on to star in the movie The Animal with Rob Schneider. But since then, what happened to Colleen Haskell? where did she go? Okay, we're not going to do that. That's just a taste of what it could be like. It would be huge. It would be huge. Forget about Richard Simmons. We're going to find Colleen Haskell one day, and we're going to make a podcast about it. But that is for another day, because we have so much still to do as we get ready for Survivor 38. We've got links to Kelly Wentworth has a ton of appearances on Rob as a podcast, including all the appearances with me. She was also on the Bachelorette and the Bachelor Rehap Ups with Amy and Haley a bunch of times. So lots of great stuff with Kelly Wentworth. David Wright as well. We got links to all of his appearances, including the time that he was on Post Show Recaps with me to talk about the episode of Star Trek, The City on the Edge of Forever. So if you are into these Survivor 38 returnees, you've got a lot of stuff to listen to. Of course, this stuff is all accessible when you use the Rehap app, which is completely free. Check out the search feature to go back and find interviews with so many of your favorites over the 9-year history of Rob Has a Podcast. All right, so that's going to do it for us here today. We've got a lot of Celebrity Big Brother coming up over this next week, including new episode recaps on Thursday night and the double eviction on Friday night. I know that's another language for you Survivor fans, but for those of you guys who are watching both shows, it's going to be a busy weekend, an episode Monday, and then the finale on Wednesday as we close out Celebrity Big Brother. We're going to have a preview of this season somewhere along the way, still trying to track down the First Lady of Podcasting for all of that. So stay tuned. Of course, all of First One Out already available. Hope you guys are enjoying that one. Thank you so much to the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast who make all of this possible over these last 5 years, even longer than I've known Kelly Wentworth. The patrons have been supporting Rob Has a Podcast, making all of this nonsense possible. The only way that we could go back and spend all this time on a podcast like this is by way of the support of the Rob Has a Podcast patrons. So thank you guys so much for that. For more about the benefits of becoming a patron and joining our Rob's Podcast patron community, go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. I have to thank again Sam Moore and Alex Rubino, who did a ton of work behind the scenes to make this clip show possible, just like we did with the Best of 2018 podcast, which if you enjoy clip shows like this and you haven't heard that one, go back and check that out. Go to robhasawebsite.com/best of 2018 to hear that one. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Hi, Rob. Kellen from Chicago. My family does a Survivor pool every year, and not one of us put Kelly Wentworth in the top three. She has an idol, and now she's started winning challenges, and no one seems to be talking about her. Does she have a chance to win this whole thing? Sneaky, sneaky.